Good afternoon. I'm very conscious of the fact that I stand between you and dinner. The good thing is this talk stands between me and dinner. We're going to pivot a little bit here. You've been to Contra Costa, California. You've been to Boston. You've been to Philly. Now we're going to zoom out and look at the whole country. 30,000 foot view. I'm going to talk to you over the next few minutes about a study that we are doing funded by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation to look at how health varies by states and some of the underlying factors that may be responsible for that. First off, I don't have a disclosure slide, so forgot to put that in, but I don't have any relationships to disclose. I do want to acknowledge my colleagues. This is a project that is a collaboration between the center that I direct, the Center on Society and Health at Virginia Commonwealth University, and the Urban Institute. Our colleagues from the Urban Institute are listed on the left. My colleagues at my university are listed on the right, two of whom are in the audience, Steve Cohen and Derek Chapman, and others are milling about here at the Convention Center. We have other co-investigators who are part of the project, and again, want to acknowledge the funding of the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation that made this possible. Background. So there was a report that came out a couple of years ago by the National Research Council Institute of Medicine called Shorter Lives, Poorer Health. And it showed that the health of Americans is inferior to the health of people in 16 other high-income countries. I had the opportunity to chair that panel. And after the report was released, we were approached by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation about conducting a similar analysis domestically within the U.S. Part of this is a political thing. The fact that we don't compare well to people in other countries among certain audiences is not very persuasive because they don't really care about other countries. Trying to make the same point by looking domestically within the U.S. Was thought to be helpful. The project was funded by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation in 2014. You can see the objective there. But this last bullet, which I put in, I promise you without knowing about the presentations on the panel, but I think it does dovetail well. We know that even though we're looking at the health of states, that a lot of the health disparities that we see in this country operate at the local community level, and a lot of the solutions involve choices made by communities and neighborhoods, in terms of the presentations you just heard, you can see very good examples of why that is. So this is the conceptual model that we used in the NRC-IOM report comparing the different countries, and we carried that same model over to our analysis of the health of the states. And it basically is a socio-ecological model that's arguing that our health status over on the far right-hand side is influenced by health systems, so you just heard the example about access to care. It's influenced by individual behaviors like smoking and diet and physical activity. It's influenced by socioeconomic factors like poverty and education and the minimum wage. So notice I'm trying to tie this back to your prior presentations. The physical and social environment, which you know would include lead poisoning in homes, but other characteristics of the physical and social environment like social capital. And then public policies and spending that shape all of those. And our approach to thinking about the health of the states, as I'll come back to in a minute, was to look not only at how health differs across the states, but to look at how those five buckets differ across the states as well. Methods, we looked at state-level data that we could obtain in each of those domains, focusing for the purposes of this study on the most current year for which data were available. This actually led to a fairly large number of variables that we were able to obtain for both health outcomes and determinants of health. So we actually had to enter into a data reduction exercise to try to narrow the list, both in terms of the health outcomes that we looked at and the determinants, identifying a set of core variables that we found to be most predictive or correlative with health outcomes. I'll go into that in a second. We use Spearman rank order correlation coefficients as our method for actually identifying the strength of the correlation. And just to cut to the chase, you can see the tabulation at the bottom of how many indicators we ended up looking at for health status, and then in terms of those five domains, how many indicators we looked at there. So if you're familiar with America's health rankings, county health rankings, and so forth, there is purposely in those projects a parsimony in terms of just having a few examples in each of the domains, because they're meant to be concise benchmarks for flagging potential issues. The purpose of our study was different, was actually to take a deep dive and to get into the weeds in terms of understanding more deeply how the states are doing, and that's why you see these big numbers. We were very comprehensive in looking at data sources that were available. This is obviously too small to read, but you can get the point. There's a lot of data sources that we use to pull this information together. We had systematic inclusion and exclusion criteria for deciding which data sources we were going to use, some of which were mandatory, others which were preferred. I won't belabor this, just in the interest of time. So as I said, we took a deep dive. So if you look at county health rankings or America's health rankings, you'll see there's two or three health outcomes that are typically looked at, like life expectancy or years of potential life lost. We purposely took a more comprehensive look at health and also a life course perspective. So we were careful to look at health outcomes at each stage of life, such as birth outcomes and health outcomes affecting teens and so forth, all the way through to Alzheimer's disease at the end of life, and collected state-level data on how states are doing in each of these categories. And then when we looked at the determinants, again, if you remember that diagram with the five buckets, you'll see five categories listed here, and broken down here are the specific variables we looked at in each of the domains. And again, every one of those bullets means we have state-level data for each of those that we're comparing. So as you can imagine, this is a very large data set, and it allows for some actually interesting big data kinds of work. When you map out some of these results, so this, for example, is life expectancy at birth, you see a pattern that shows up quite a bit with most of the health outcomes that we've looked at. And if you've ever done work along these lines, you're familiar with this typical pattern. The Deep South, Appalachian regions and so forth tend to have worse health outcomes. Some people have referred to this as the stroke belt, for example. If you look at the distribution of strokes or cerebrovascular mortality in the United States or cardiovascular disease, you typically see this pattern. So our assumption going into this study was that this is the scenario we're going to see over and over again for each of the health outcomes. In fact, it's the case that for many of the health outcomes, we do see this distribution. But the beauty of taking this deep dive and looking at so many health outcomes is that we were able to see that this is not always true. So this is a diagram where you purposely are not meant to be able to see the details because it's just too complicated. But it's a heat map where on the left-hand column, you have all the states and the District of Columbia. And the columns represent, going across this table, different health outcomes that we looked at. And the coloring is reflecting how states are doing in terms of high ranking and low ranking. And if you pick any state and look across horizontally, what you'll see is that although there are certain states that tend to do well or that tend to do poorly, there are exceptions. And so, for example, you'll see Hawaii is at the top because it has the highest life expectancy of states in the United States. But if you look over to the far right-hand side of that first row, you'll see a red box that happens to be influenza and pneumococcal mortality, which it happens to have very high rates for. So this kind of analysis is helping us to identify outliers or phenomena where states are doing better or worse. This has looking at mortality. There's a similar chart like this that looks at morbidity. We don't have enough time for me to actually walk you through all those results. But I do want to point out that when you go into these data and again, get into the weeds a little bit about the results, you see that that pattern of the Deep South always doing the worst is not always true. So this is an example of the exception to the rule, suicide mortality, where you can clearly see something going on in the Rocky Mountain states, where there is clearly a higher rate of suicide. It begs the question, what's going on there? Is this something related to firearms? Is this something related to narcotics? You want to sort of unpack that and disaggregate the causes of the suicide, the means of suicide, the ecological circumstances going on to try to explore that. And that's where we get to the next part of our study, which is to try to look at those differences across states in terms of those five domains that I mentioned. The process that we're using for trying to get into this, again, is relying on a relatively simple statistical method, and we hope in follow-up research to do more sophisticated multivariate modeling. But just to get our foot in the water, are doing these Spearman rank order coefficients, where we're cross, where we're looking at the relationship between how states rank in terms of these various health outcomes and all those determinants that we have. So in this particular example here, you're seeing some characteristics of the physical and social environment ranked against the various health outcomes. And that allows us to identify particular factors that seem to matter more. We are also able to look at the confounding or interrelationships that exist between variables. So for example, if we look at health behaviors, we can see that states that rank highly in terms of smoking or diet or physical activity also tend to rate highly in terms of teens using birth control and other health behaviors that are health promoting. States that tend to rank poorly in terms of socioeconomic circumstances like poverty or education are more likely to have other socioeconomic circumstances. And those interrelationships become important, as you'll see in a minute, when we turn up some rather perplexing results in terms of correlations. So for example, if you take one of the health outcomes we have, such as children's health, and ask the question, what state rankings are most closely correlated, one of the things you see is that among the variables in our large collection that have the highest Spearman correlation coefficient, are neighborhood conditions. So this fits very well with what you just heard about in the prior presentations. Children living in supportive neighborhoods, children living in safe neighborhoods, outranks things like education, income, and classic social determinants of health. They are also highly correlated. This table is just only showing the top five, but if you keep going down the list, you'll get to classic social determinants of health. But, and I say this as a physician, healthcare is not on this list. The major drivers of children's health are probably not what happens in doctors' offices and hospitals. With all due credit to my own specialty of primary care, this is where the action is in terms of importance of health. We've looked at other variables that are closely related. You do see a little clinical thing popping up there, ambulatory electronic medical records, which is sort of a proxy for primary care services turning up as an important factor. But you can see these other variables like child poverty and single-parent households coming up as particularly important in relation to this health outcome, which is low birth weight. It's important, as I mentioned, to address the issue of confounding variables. So, for example, in this case here, childhood overweight and obesity, you see that teen use of birth control is a variable that is among those with the highest correlation with childhood overweight and obesity. And one wouldn't posit that birth control has any direct causal relationship with overweight and obesity. However, as you can see on the right, that particular behavior has strong correlation with other healthy behaviors. And so states that tend to do well in terms of teen contraceptive use are also places where children have healthier behaviors like physical activity and so forth, which would indeed explain the lower rates of obesity. So we're trying to make sense of this by thinking about those interrelationships. We've got a lot of remaining work, as you can see here. We're going into great detail in terms of examining these relationships, and my exhausted colleagues in the row back there are helping me work through this. Limitations. Obviously, if you look at statistics at the state level, you're basically diluting much more dramatic differences that exist in smaller geographic areas, such as across neighborhoods and so forth in cities. And you're also diluting differences that exist when you look at subpopulations, especially high-risk and vulnerable populations. Multivariate adjustments is the obvious way to go for this. That has not been performed in this project. State borders are not always the most logical boundary, even for geographic comparisons, because some of the decisions that are made affecting these determinants are made at different jurisdictional levels, like school districts or county boundaries and so forth. And obviously, the data that we're working with have their own inherent precision problems related to how they were obtained. So conclusions, because I have 1 minute left. The Deep South does rank poorly on many health outcomes, but not always. The geographic distribution of poor health differs. It depends on which condition you're looking at. Clearly, how states are doing in terms of health depends on a life course perspective. So states that are doing fabulously on life expectancy and adult health status may not be great for children's health. They may not be the best place to be born if you're a newborn. Healthcare matters, so does the prevalence of health behaviors. We know that from a large body of epidemiologic literature. But our evidence shows that socioeconomic status, and importantly, the characteristics of the physical and social environment matter just as much in all likelihood, or at least they correlate just as much. We do find that states with poor health tend to spend more on health care. It's probably because their population's sicker. But they're also spending more on education, or spending less on education and income support, which may have a lot to do with their health status. States with better health outcomes tend to have higher tobacco taxes, broader Medicaid eligibility, and this suggests that these policy decisions that our states are making have very deep health implications. So thank you for your time, and I don't know how much time we have left for questions at this point.
You have 5 minutes.
Wow, I earned
five minutes. You have about 4 minutes.
Well,
but we have plenty of time.
We can open it up to questions for the whole panel if you'd like.
Well, you haven't gotten the chance to answer questions from your presentation, so we can give you 4 and then open it up for
okay.
the rest of the
okay,
time.
So 4 for me and then 1 for
everybody else.
Does anybody have any questions?
Question.
Oh, question from the panel.
Yeah. So did you consider foreign-born? So what we see in California is that a lot of the socioeconomic factors are kind of awash. When you look at foreign-born, they have much better life expectancy.
Right. So the question, I don't know if you heard in the back, was whether we considered foreign-born individuals. I think you're referring to, for example, the Hispanic paradox and other phenomena where we see that new immigrants have better health outcomes. No, not in this project. In others, we do, because we're looking at state population health statistics and the whole aggregate state population. A follow-up project would allow us to start stratifying results by subgroups. Race, ethnicity, socioeconomic status, and other domains. So I don't think we can unpack that particular part of it, but we know from that literature that we would see some very different patterns if we looked, for example, at immigrants who have come to this country within the last 10 years. They have different, typically better health outcomes than native folks. Okay, so I'll start with the gentleman with the tie, and then I'll. Yes, sir. So the main variable that we're looking at is adult incarceration rates. We have looked at some other related criminal justice statistics like parole and probation statistics for those areas, and of course the violence rate, the number of violent crimes reported by the Department of Justice. Not able to, well, at least we don't have access to state level data on policing tactics. Obviously, that's a very timely issue that we're all talking about. But I don't think we're going to have that kind of analysis. But what we are finding is that many of these health outcomes actually do have strong relationships to incarceration rates. Incarceration is in many ways a socioeconomic condition as much as anything else because of its disruption of families and its effect on children and so forth. Okay, and then the gentleman behind you had his hand up.
Thank you for taking me in, Gushin. Can you start off by talking about how we compare against other countries? And I'm wondering if there are other countries that have done these just type of deep dive analysis, and whether those countries that have better life expectancies than ours have something that they're doing well that we're not doing well that maybe we can learn from.
Well, that's something that we looked at in the prior project in terms of what's going on in those other countries that might explain why they have better health outcomes. Really, the story's the same. What we are probably finding out in this study is very consistent with the indications we saw in the cross-national study, which is that they are investing more in social programs, for example, than in healthcare. They invest more in infrastructure. we saw that U.S. death rates from things that are as wide-ranging as birth outcomes and car crashes are higher in the U.S. than in the other countries. So it suggests that they're making choices about motor vehicle safety, highway design, and so forth, probably because they have a different social system that allows them to apply higher taxes to pay for that infrastructure. They don't have a Second Amendment to deal with in terms of explaining their low number of death rates from shootings and so forth, that, you know, are all factors that, that might explain the differences. Yes, ma'am, your hand. In each of the five buckets that we looked at, healthcare, health behaviors, socioeconomic, and so on, we found the U.S. inferior to those other countries. So in the healthcare space, we had a lack of a universal healthcare system, lack of a primary care workforce, poorer measures on quality of care and patient satisfaction, and so on, just within the healthcare space. But you go through each of the domains, we have problems. The only advantage we have right now is smoking. We have lower smoking rates.
I'm sorry.
We're out of time?